This is Jim Inkster. We'll take a look today at the presidential election 25 days away. Last night, the aspirants for vice president, the incumbent Joseph Biden and the challenger Paul Ryan, debated, and it was a lively exchange between the 69-year-old Biden and the 42-year-old Ryan. We'll talk with Ben Baggert, former state senator, about his impressions. Baggert is now a ranking Republican, former Democrat, and he was involved in many campaigns in Louisiana and was Bob Dole's campaign manager in this state in 1996. Also, Trey Orso, Democratic political consultant, is slated to be with us and give his impressions about the debate. All this today, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Our number is 297-5633 locally. And if you're calling outside the Baton Rouge area, please dial 877-217-5757 toll free. You may reach us online at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Last night, the vice presidential candidates debated in Danville, Kentucky. Joe Biden, the incumbent, and Paul Ryan, the challenger. And with us to talk about it are Democratic political consultant Trey Orso and Republican former state lawmaker Ben Baggert, who joins us from the great city of New Orleans. Ben Baggert, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to you, Trey.
Hey, Ben.
Well, Ben, what is your take on the election 25 days out and the performance last night of Paul Ryan?
Well, I think everybody agrees the election is really, really tight, and I don't have any insights because I don't think that the public's totally decided yet. I thought Ryan won the debate, of course, and I think a lot of people that are Republicans of my persuasion will tell you that. The question is, how did it play with a lot of people like Trey? And I think even Trey will admit that really all the Romney ticket needed was for this young man to make a good impression and get a tie. In my view, he far exceeded that. He bested Biden. He was thoughtful. He appeared to be a thoughtful young man versus a blustering old hack who tended to shout down or interrupt when sincerely thoughtful points were being made. But we'll have to find out what the voters like. But I have this observation. I think that people that watch these debates, like me and Trey, are partisans, and most people in America right now have decided. It's kind of like when LSU plays Alabama. We're not so much looking to see the good in Alabama. We just want our guy to win. But there are a few who are undecided, and they're those who are committed but not strongly committed or motivated. And I think these debates have an effect on the intensity or the enthusiasm of those people who are not strongly committed, and maybe they'll dampen the enthusiasm of those people to go out and vote. And I think these debates have had an effect on people that maybe they would vote for Obama, but they're not going to take an hour to go wait in line and vote. Because what they've been able to show is that these people are human, they're thoughtful, they do care, and they have a plan, and they're not the ogres that the several hundred million dollars in Obama's negative campaigning have made them out to be.
Trey, what was your impression about the showdown last night between Paul Ryan, who's the same age as you, and Joe Biden, who's a few years older than Senator Baggert?
I agree with Ben that Paul Ryan did what he needed to do in the sense that he held his ground and he held himself and handled himself well. I really thought Joe Biden won the debate. I mean, I thought he dominated the debate. I thought, listening to the post-debate discussions on TV last night and again this morning on the radio and TV, the biggest criticism of Biden was, he was too aggressive or he interrupted too much or he smiled too much. I mean, good gracious. Not a whole lot of argument of what he had to say. And I thought that, last week the criticism Obama wasn't aggressive enough. Today, the Republicans are saying Biden was too aggressive. I mean, it's like the Goldilocks, you know, the porridge is never just right for these guys. But I thought Biden did a really good job. I also agree with Ben that, you know, a lot of times it's partisans like us who are watching. And I can say that as a partisan and as a big supporter of the President Obama and Mr. Biden, I was really fired up last night. I thought Joe Biden laid it out. He was interrupting because Ryan wasn't telling the truth on a lot of stuff. And so instead of just letting him rattle on, Biden interrupted him and called him out on it. And so I thought that was what he needed to do. I thought it was great, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, the next debate will be Tuesday night, October 16th. That's next week at Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. And it'll be about foreign and domestic news, and it'll be a town hall-style debate. And this one will feature the president and Governor Romney. Ben, I think when all is said and done, it really comes down to how the two candidates at the top of the ticket do in the next couple of debates. What do you think will happen come Tuesday in New York?
Well, I think I don't think Obama's going to be able to turn Romney around. I believe that Romney is a far more intelligent person than even Obama, the mighty Obama, who everybody wants to acclaim as brilliant. He is brilliant when he has a teleprompter. He's one of the greatest speech makers with a teleprompter and a good speech that anybody's ever seen. But these debates where he can't be prompted don't work for him when he's up against a guy like Romney, who I think is extremely bright, has an enormous command of the issues, and thinks very quickly on his feet. I think that the story will be, after the second debate is over, is that Romney bested him again. But that's not going to determine so much the outcome of the election from here on out. I think that what it could do to influence the outcome of the election, as I said a moment ago, it could dampen the enthusiasm of some people who are right now in the Obama column, who would vote for Obama if they could get there, but just aren't enthusiastic enough to go ahead and vote. I think if he can dampen some of that enthusiasm and enhance some enthusiasm on his side, it'll make the difference.
See, this is the great thing about America, that you could have two people as smart as Ben and I disagree so much over an issue. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I don't find that Mitt Romney is the sharpest tool in the shed. I just don't get that impression. And if you look at him historically, when he has been put on the spot, he's not the quickest thinker on his feet. Now, he did well the other night, I'll admit that. But next Tuesday night in that town hall setting where they're interacting with voters and there's more give and take, I think that's going to be right in the president's wheelhouse. I think he's going to be more engaged. And to try and insinuate that Barack Obama is not a highly intelligent person just doesn't even make sense.
297-5633. By all accounts, it's a close race. The Huffington Post, in its map, shows President Obama with 257 electoral votes leaning in his direction, and Governor Romney with 206. And the only swing states left, according to this map, is the only swing states are Nevada, Colorado, Ohio, Virginia, and Florida. But Romney, if the other numbers are correct, Ben, would have to win almost all of those states to win the election. He may win the popular vote, but to win in the Electoral College, it seems he's got to win most of the states that are still in the balance. What do you think his prospects are of making up ground in the final 25 days?
Well, he's got a tough road to hoe, but I think it's doable. And I think there are a few other states out there that are up for grabs. I don't think you can say that Nevada is. I mean Colorado is in the Obama column.
Well, that's one that's
she's listed. Got that one, yeah, leaning Romney.
No, they got that one as a swing state. The swing states, according to this, are Nevada, Colorado, Ohio, Virginia, and Florida. Now, the states that Obama has a lead in, but not an insurmountable lead, according to this map, surprisingly, Oregon, Iowa, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and New Hampshire.
It all hinges on Ohio. I mean, that no Republican has ever won the White House without winning Ohio. And the president, before the debate, had leads ranging anywhere from 5 to 10 points, some polls as high as 11. After the debate, it closed. Yesterday, a poll came out that had the president up 6 points in Ohio. Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, those states are going to go Democrat, even though Paul Ryan's from Wisconsin. I think that when he put Ryan on the ticket with his Medicare voucher program, I really think he hurt himself in Florida with all the seniors and retirees in Florida. I don't think that Paul Ryan helped their ticket at all in Florida. But the hinge on this election is Ohio. Romney cannot win without Ohio. But not only does he have to win Ohio, Jim, you're right. He has to sweep all these swing states to get to 270. And that's really, at this stage, tough for him to do.
He could lose one of them, but he could not lose Ohio or Florida.
Has to take Ohio and Florida, yeah.
297-5633 for Ben Baggert, who ran Bob Dole's campaign in this state in 1996, and Trey Orso, who is former executive director of the Democratic Party, now a prominent national political consultant. What's going to happen in Louisiana, Ben?
Well, Louisiana's going to go for Romney Ryan.
Big?
It doesn't matter if it's big. It looks big, but from what they're saying right now, but it'll certainly be Romney Ryan. I don't think Trey will dispute that.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think Louisiana will go for the Romney ticket, although I don't know that it's going to be quite as big of a wipeout as maybe the Republicans think.
As it was 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think what's happened with the last two debates is that Romney brought into question the multi-million dollar assertion by Obama that he was a cruel, shallow plutocrat who didn't care about people. I think he brought it into question. I think Ryan refuted that. He looked to me like he would have impressed many people as a thoughtful, caring young man trying to do the right thing. And I really think he nailed it with Medicare and senior citizens to allay some of the demagogic fears that Obama Ryan have been trying to put into the hearts of people 55 years and older. I think he came across very, very well with that on the debate last night, as well as in his appearances after he was first chosen by Romney.
Albert Samuels, professor of political science at Southern University, calling in. Good morning, Dr. Samuels. You're on with Ben Baggert and Trey Orso.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your guests. Good morning to your guests. I just had to make a comment when Ben Baggert made a reference to the teleprompter, and that the president is very good as long as he has a teleprompter. And I want to take issue with that. That is a dog whistle. I am tired of listening to people from the right use this teleprompter crack as if to somehow to say that this president, he's not as intelligent or as accomplished as you think he is. He only speaks well when he has a teleprompter. Now, I'll admit the president did not have his best night there tonight. But this president has shown by his performance and by his background that he is very intelligent and very capable. I am tired of listening to this dog whistle. That is exactly what it is.
All right. Well, we'll get Ben to respond. We're about to hit a break, and we hit a nerve with Dr. Samuels and perhaps some other folks. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 outside the area. Inkster Show at WRKF.org if you reach us by email. Ben Baggert, former state senator, served more than 25 years in the Louisiana legislature. He was the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in 1990 in the Bennett Johnston, David Duke, Ben Baggard race, and Trey Orso, former executive director of the Democratic Party in Louisiana. They're back after this one-minute timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Kevin Gallagher is producing. Trey Orso, ranking Democrat in Louisiana, and Ben Baggard, now a Republican. He was a Democrat for many years, but he's been a Republican now for well over two decades, and he is staunchly in the corner of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, while Trey Orso is a supporter of the president and Joe Biden. What about Professor Samuel saying that the allegations that President Obama needs a teleprompter, that's a dog whistle? How do you respond, Ben?
Well, you can call it a dog whistle, but it's a fact. All you have to do is watch his news conferences. He's never as brilliant and articulate and in command of the issues when he's at a news conference. That's why he gives so few of them. He'll occasionally give a great speech, but if you look at him at his news conferences where he doesn't have a teleprompter and isn't in that type of control, you have to ask yourself, why is he stammering so much and never answering the question? I know that Professor Samuels probably feels about Obama like I did about Mickey Mantle when I was a kid. Nobody could criticize Mantle when he struck out or had a problem. But those are the facts. I think most people understand that he is not as articulate as everybody made him out to be from the beginning.
The real facts are is that President Obama, whether he has a teleprompter or not, always carries himself and handles himself very well. To me, the more interesting thing is when Mitt Romney is speaking and he doesn't know that there's a camera in front of his face, and he says that 47% of the people are takers, or he complains the other day that when his wife was in an airplane and had some smoke in the plane that, you can't open these windows on airplanes. That's a real problem. I mean, this guy is not the sharpest tool in the shed, Ben, and you know that. And what he says when he doesn't know that people are listening, I think tells us a lot more about him than what Obama says when he knows people are listening. And
you mean like when Obama told Putin, just wait till my next election is over, then we'll really do what you want to do.
Sure.
I mean, you've ignored that? What a horrible thing for a president of the United States to say when he didn't think other people were listening to one of our
somebody
who's arming
presidential
people like
elections
and relying on Iran and voting against sanctions or tamping down our sanctions on Iran, for the president of the United States to tell him.
You very well know that world leaders have to take that into account. That is nothing compared to Mitt Romney telling us that 47% of all Americans are takers.
Betty in Mid-City. Betty, you're on with Ben and Trey. Hi, Betty.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to make a comment. I've been listening to most of the comments since the debate last night. But I'd just like to say, in reference to the teleprompter, I mean, anybody would, I'm going to give Yana Van Zandt a plug. Let's call a thing a thing. A teleprompter speaks for you. It doesn't speak your mind. So when a teleprompter is telling you what to say and you have other thoughts in your mind, how can you not come across as not articulate? So let's just call a thing a thing. As for, what's happening now in our society, I'm going to still call a thing a thing. President Obama is trying to help. Scores of people have lost their jobs because the Republicans are not willing to cross the lines because of racial inequality. That's the bottom line. Call a thing a thing.
All right. Thank you, Betty. Ben?
Well, I'll call a thing a thing. A thing is that for the first 2 years of his administration, Obama had everything he needed to turn this country around. He had a Democratic majority in the Senate, a Democratic majority in the House, and he was the president of the United States. And yet, people still have problems, and he did not turn the economy around. He did not turn the country around, and instead he worsened things.
Ben,
so when you call a thing, I call it a worsened thing.
Ben, you know what he had in the first 2 years of his administration? He had the worst recession since the Great Depression. He had two wars that were not paid for. He had the auto industry in collapse. He had the financial industry on the brink of collapse. And to say that he hasn't improved things and that the economy is not improving. It's just ignoring reality. What this guy inherited and the direction that the country is going now is made a complete 180. And all the while, the Republicans, their number one mission has been to make Barack Obama a one-term president. Mitch McConnell said it. Our goal is to make sure that he fails. So in the face of Republican obstructionism, this guy has turned the economy around. Jobs are being created again. The auto industry has been saved. And we're ending the wars that he said he would. And I think he should be commended for that.
Judy on I-10. Hi, Judy. You're on with Ben and Trey. Hi, Judy.
Good morning. Something I was just noticing is that with President Obama, and I do call him President Obama, that number one, there were questions about his birth. That was solved. There were questions about his intellect. Harvard, that was solved. There were questions about whether or not he was a forceful speaker. When he's speaking extraneously, he tends to be one. There have been questions about whether or not he was bringing jobs in or whether he was saving things. And something that I've come to realize, it takes a while to fix a problem. 4 years does not tend to do it when it's not all about the president. But
all right. Thank you, Judy. Ben, would you respond to Judy, please?
I agree that he does speak extraneously very often.
Rather than extemporaneously. But what about 4 years not being enough?
Well, we could really be in bad shape if you looked at some of the projections in 2012. I mean, in 2016, if we continue with this same trajectory, we'll be in a worse mess.
Trey,
Social Security for my children and people Trey's age will really be jeopardized.
It took George Bush 8 years to put us in the mess that we took over. So to expect Obama to be able to turn around in 2 or 3, I think is unreasonable. I mean, the facts are the facts. The economy is improving. Jobs are being created. Financial collapse is avoided. He's pulled us out of the wars. We're offering health care to people that didn't have it before. I think the accomplishments, looking back 20 years from now, I think that people will look and say that this man accomplished a great deal in his first term.
Victor in New Roads. Hi, Victor. You're on with Ben Baggert and Trey Orso.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. My comment really is specifically about the Republican Party in general. I think independent fact checkers have proven that they have a proclivity to lie. They just don't care about the facts. They know what the facts are. But they also know that if there's going to be a clarification or anything of that sort in the press after they've lied, most of the people aren't going to hear that clarification.
All right. Thank you, Victor. Ben, does the Republican Party lie more than the Democratic Party?
No. Let me tell you about lying. Lying is what happened in the last 2.5 weeks after the attack in Benghazi, when the President of the United States sent the ambassador to the United Nations onto all of the morning talk shows to say that this was a spontaneous thing that turned sour. The president and his administration didn't want the people of the United States of America to know that they were asleep at the switch when an attack occurred. Now we're learning that there was a request for help by the people that were on the ground there, which was denied. That's real lying. That's, to me, that's as bad as Nixon with deniability about what he knew and when he knew it. People died, and people were less safe because of it. What's even more interesting is what Biden did yesterday. Biden yesterday threw Hillary Clinton and the intelligence community under the bus, and you're going to read about this tomorrow and the next day and the day after that, when Biden said we didn't know, when the truth of the matter is that there are people on record right now as having said they did know. We did ask for help, and it was denied to us.
Jim, I think the caller makes a good point. I don't want to throw all Republicans, this blanket over all Republicans, but this guy, Mitt Romney, I think part of the deal with the debate last week was that I think the president was just thrown off because the guy standing on the stage with him was so far removed from the Mitt Romney that's been campaigning for the last year and a half. When he was governor of Massachusetts, he was for universal health care. Now he's against it. Now he's saying he may keep parts of it. Back then he was pro-choice. Now he's pro-life. The other day he said, well, we won't overturn it. Then yesterday they said, yeah, we're pro-life again against all abortion. This guy has switched positions so many times on so many issues. I can't keep track of which Romney I'm going to vote against on November 6th. See, I can't keep up with this guy.
Reverend Randy and Zachary. Hi, Reverend Randy. You're on with Trey Orso, Democrat, and Ben Baggert, Republican.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Mr. Orso, for addressing the intelligence of the president so nicely. My question is to you, when you look at the gains that have been made and the unemployment rate dropping down and the economy growing, would you agree that if the Republicans would have worked with the president instead of blocking everything that he put forth, that our country would be much better off?
All right, Ben, would the country be better off?
No, I think what the Republicans have managed to do is stop this multiplier of the deficit that we're dealing with. That is the biggest national security threat that we have. If this country collapses economically and programs aren't there for us, if we can't generate work for people, and if as a result of not having work for people, we default and people like China grow in influence to our detriment, then there'll be even a worse problem. So hats off to the Republican Congress for the last year and a half for preventing the drunken sailor spending of the Democrats.
I think the one thing Ben and I might agree on is that neither party has a monopoly on debts and deficits. I mean, for anybody to argue over deficits after the Bush-Reagan years, when you keep giving huge tax breaks to the wealthy that are not paid for, and when you keep putting wars on credit cards, they create deficits. And when you double down on trickle down, we lose jobs. It happens every time there's a Republican administration comes in there, and Ben knows it. And so I don't think that you can blame deficit issues on President Obama. That is a chronic problem for presidents of both parties.
Kelly in Central. Hi, Kelly. You're on with Ben and Trey.
Hey, I'm a little bit frustrated with both candidates because neither of them seem to address what, in my opinion, is probably the central issue that faces this country today. It's the fact that we are the world's leading manufacturer of nothing and the world's leading consumer of everything. Jobs that began going overseas in the Reagan administration, you know, to third world countries where you could pay a guy $3 an hour and house him in a dormitory with 60 other people, they think it's the greatest thing in the world. Well, you've got to pay American workers $25 an hour to produce products at the same prices. So how do we combat that?
All right. Trey, let's start with you on that one. That's something that obviously is pertinent to the life as we know it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a huge problem competing with cheap wages from foreign countries, and that's why we have lost a lot of jobs. And I think that's why the president talks about creating incentives and tax incentives for companies that create jobs here in America instead of shipping those jobs overseas.
Ben?
In many instances, we are subsidizing those other countries through some of our internal policies. We have people in America who will not take an $8 or a $10 an hour job because so much of what is required is paid for by the government.
Mark in Sherwood. Mark, you're on the – excuse me, Mark in Port Allen. You're on with Ben Baggert and Trey Orso.
Yes, my question is to the Republican gentleman. He talks about the four people that were killed on September the 11th, 2012. I wonder if he can tell me how many people were killed on September 11th, 2001, when George W. Bush was in office.
Ben?
Well, it was thousands. It was an awful thing. But, I mean, are we going to say that George Bush is responsible for the initial attacks?
Trey, do you think President Bush had some culpability in the attacks on America on 9/11?
Well, look, I mean, I think the caller's point, what he was trying to make, is that, you know, they want to throw the Benghazi thing on Obama right now while ignoring that our country's been attacked before with presidents from different administrations, whether it's Bush 9/11 or Roosevelt at Pearl Harbor, or go on back. So, I mean, the point is that there are intelligence lapses, and they happen. And as the vice president said last night, they are doing everything they can to find the people that murdered the ambassador and the other Americans and bring them to justice. And they're investigating to find out exactly where the lapses were this time to ensure that they don't happen again.
Carl,
but Bush didn't send the head of the United Nations out to tell the American people that 9/11 was something other than what it was. Think about what happened that Sunday after September 11th, 2012. You had our representative to the United Nations go on all the Sunday talk shows and say that this was the result of some video produced by some fool out in California.
Carl in Sherwood, thank you, Ben. You're on with Trey Orso and Ben Baggert. Carl?
Hello. Yes. Hello. I'm sorry. I'm concerned about Ben and his lack of history. Whenever you had the Bush administration send out the vice president, Condoleezza Rice, and many others to line not only to the UN and to the world about lying us into a war with Iraq. This, you cannot forget that Bush lied also. So to talk about any administration lying, it's about what are you doing? You know, the try to say that only one party does it and not us is ridiculous.
Well, let me respond to that. I didn't know that we were having an election in 30-something days between George W. Bush and Barack Obama. If that's the case, maybe I'm on the wrong radio show. Every time I point out to you and other listeners some of the flaws about Barack Obama and his administration and his lack of leadership, you respond not by saying that Obama was wrong or that Obama made a mistake. It's, yeah, but Bush was worse. This is a race. This is a vote on Barack Obama. It's a concern as to whether or not he and his and what he's done merits another 4 years, or whether we should give Romney and Ryan a try.
Ben, or excuse me, Trey.
Well, I think the point is that Romney and Ryan are basically saying we want to go back to the Bush policies, economic policies, foreign policy policies, and people now recognize that those policies were a failure. And so, yeah, George W. Bush, his name is not on the ballot next month, but his economic policies sure are, and I think that a majority of Americans recognize that those sent us into a terrible economic decline, and they don't want to go back there.
We're 25 days away from the election, November 6th, and last night a stark contrast between 69-year-old Joe Biden, elected to the Senate in 1972, when his challenger, Paul Ryan, was all of 2 years old. Ryan is 42 years old, and it's the only vice presidential debate. The presidential candidates will go at it again next Tuesday at Hofstra. Roberto in Mid-City, please be brief as we go to the break. Roberto, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point on how recently I've been hearing Mitt Romney saying that the campaign they're running now is about America, when before they were stating not long ago, a couple months ago, they had American credit in hostage just to benefit their party. And now, you know, they're kind of changing their tune and saying it's about America. When, you know, back then it seemed like America was in a situation where it really couldn't deal with that, but yet they didn't release the credit, you know, to allow America to go forward.
We'll get Ben and Trey to comment on this and other matters as we return. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. With us for a bit longer are Ben Baggert, former state senator, former state house member from the great city of New Orleans, where he is one of the state's prominent lawyers. He ran Bob Dole's campaign for the presidency in Louisiana in 1996. And Trey Orso, who is the former executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party, now a significant Democratic pollster who handles, not pollster, but a political consultant who handles candidates all across the United States. Jay on Jones Creek, Jay, good morning. You're on with Trey and Ben. Hi, Jay.
When is the Democratic Party going to wake up and realize what Obama is doing to the foreign policy of this country? He goes underworld, apologizes for U.S., and he's licking Muslims, saying, you know, that they're not doing anything wrong. And when is he going to realize that we are in a major war with the Muslim ideology, and if we don't face up to it, it's going to be a dark days ahead for the whole of the world.
Trey?
Well, I think what the gentleman was asking is trying to imply was that we're in a war with the Muslim world. Is that what he said?
Well, I think he's talking about Muslim extremists.
Obviously there are Muslim extremists, and there are other types of extremists that have bad designs on the United States of America, and that's something that every president has to deal with, every administration. But you know, there's been a unbelievable amount of turnover and unrest in the Arab world with the Arab Spring that the president has had to deal with all the while. You have Iran, you have China, you have the North Koreans. You know, it's a tough job. You have a lot of issues to deal with, and I think he's doing a pretty good job handling it.
Ben, what do you think?
I don't disagree with that, and I think it's important that we not exacerbate the problem or create the impression that would even worsen the feelings of people over there. But I have this observation. The significance of the people in the Arab world and the Muslims in the Eastern, Middle Eastern and further Eastern part of the world is that they control an area which has the most important natural resource that keeps America working, and that's petroleum. If we would adopt policies over here that would get this enormous amount of natural gas down from the northern part of this country and southern part of Canada, the significance of those people in our policy making would be greatly diminished. But we don't do it, and there's no explanation why. That would be a tremendous job incentive for people. If we brought all that gas down, it would put people to work right now building a pipeline, and we would have a lot of clean fuel, and our environment would be far better off than if we continued to import oil from those countries.
I mean, I have a hard time believing that building one pipeline is going to solve the ills of the Middle East and foreign policy, but I tend to agree with Ben that we ought to do as much as we can to be energy independent here in America, and I believe that the president has been working towards that. I mean, the oil patch is booming right now. If you go down on the coast, all the boats are working. Everybody's working down there. You got rigs out in the Gulf. All that, all the while, in the wake of the worst environmental disaster that we've ever seen with the BP Gulf spill just 2 years ago. So I think he's handling that pretty well.
Yeah, but Trey, that's in spite of Obama dragging his feet on all the permitting.
Right, Ben. You don't expect when the BP rig blew up that they were going to slow down permitting and take a look and make sure this didn't happen again. I mean, you're down there in New Orleans. You've been down to the coast and seen what it's done to businesses and families and environment down there. There's still a big oil sheen going on out in the Gulf right now that BP reported just yesterday. So you don't think in the wake of the largest environmental disaster that we've ever seen that we should say, hold on, let's take a look and see what we're doing out here and not play cowboy with these oil rigs way out in the Gulf of Mexico.
Dominic in Grand Coteau. Dominic, you're on with Ben and Trey. Hi, Dominic.
Good morning, guys. Great show, of course. My comment is that by the Republican guy there, that we we're not drilling for gas and oil. Why are the prices so low? And also under the Obama administration, there's been more drilling than even in George Bush's. And I just think that's disingenuous and not representing the facts, which is the Republican policy.
Ben.
Is it not a fact that Obama has vetoed the pipeline that'll get natural gas out of the shale in the northern part of the country, in the Dakotas, eastern Montana, southern Canada? Is it not a fact that Obama will not allow people to build that pipeline? That's the fact. You were unaware of that?
But I think the point the gentleman was trying to make is that production is at an all-time high right now.
No, the point he was trying to make is that Republicans were playing loose with the facts.
Natural gas is at an all-time low.
That he's ignoring.
All right, 297-5633. We're going to get to as many of you as we can in our remaining time with Ben Baggert and Trey Orso. Please be brief. HB in Denham Springs. Hi, HB.
Good morning, gentlemen. Your show today with these two guests just brought up a strong point that I was thinking about. How can the average voter who is outside the loop of knowing what is true, what is not true, what is half-truth by Republicans or Democrats, how are they going to make an informed decision when they go to the voting booth with all of this controversy that's going back and forth now about truth and untruth?
All right, and thank you, HB. Another listener, Cammy, notes that both of the candidates last night have had problems with the truth. At the very least, she says Congressman Ryan lied about his marathon time, and Joe Biden has been twice exposed as a plagiarist. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on with Ben Baggert and Trey Orso. Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Jim? Great subject again, as always. Just want to make a statement, clarification on the drilling of gas. Right now, there is more drilling going on in Pointe-Coupee Parish and northern Louisiana than ever on natural gas. So gas is coming out of shale. We just built a huge salt dome storage capacity in Port Barry, Louisiana. I know it doesn't talk about a lot, but gas is flowing in Louisiana.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, please be brief. Phil?
Yes, sir. Could you please explain to us what we're going to do after we run through in 100 years or so the oil that it took millions of years to be formed?
All right, Ben.
I hope that in 100 years we don't even have to use that. I am in agreement with those who want to develop alternative energy sources. For example, I thoroughly agree with the motives and the impulses of Barack Obama that we should improve our technology and use more power from wind, from solar, and maybe other sources. And
all right, Katie on I-10. Katie, good morning. You're on with Ben and Trey. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I have a question about taxes. Specifically, how do both parties define taxes? And, for instance, are the tax cuts due to expire, would that be considered a new tax? And if you get rid of the mortgage interest deduction, is that considered a new tax?
All right, Trey?
Yeah, well, if Bobby Jindal was here, he would say that it would be a new tax or a tax renewal, I guess, is his policy. But since we're not talking about him today, the president – policy is that he wants to keep the tax cuts for middle class and let them expire for the richest 120,000 families in the United States. And I think that was spelled out really clearly by Joe Biden last night. The Republicans, on the other hand, want to continue the Bush tax breaks for everybody, even though they're not paid for and led to the financial problems that we see today. So I think there's a very clear, they want to call President Obama a tax and spender, but the fact of the matter is he lowered taxes on almost all Americans in his first term, and I think that he's done a good job with it.
Right, Ben?
Well, I don't think it's important whether you call it a new tax. What you have to do is think about what's going to happen to you when you start paying your taxes after the expiration. You'll be paying more money to the government. The government will be receiving more money in taxes instead of cutting some of the unnecessary expenditures that it makes.
I think another key point on the tax thing, and Paul Ryan has had a tough time with it, and Mitt Romney has refused to answer the question. They keep talking about these tax breaks, and they're going to pay for them by ending exemptions and deductions and all these things, like this lady mentioned, your home mortgage deduction. But they refuse, either they don't know, or it's the best kept secret in America, because they refuse to tell the American public what deductions and write-offs that they're going to get rid of to pay for these taxes. And I think that's a big hole that they need to fill between now and November 6th, because this, hey, trust me stuff is just not working.
Well, we're going to switch topics here in a moment, but we thank Ben and Trey for staying with us much of the hour, and we are 25 days away from the election. These two gentlemen are worthy adversaries. Ben, what happens on the 6th of November? Who wins, and how close will it be?
I have no idea. If I were to tell you, I'd be making something up. I just have no idea. I hope it's Romney, but I don't know.
Trey?
Yeah, I think President Obama wins with about 300 electoral votes.
Okay. We'll see. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Trey. Good to visit
good
with you.
Good talking to you,
Ben. Always good to be with you, Trey. Right, congratulations on all your successes.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
All right. And as we switch gears, 25 days away from the election, we remind you that we will cover it every step of the way. And next Tuesday's debate, of course, will be covered right here on WRKF, as was last night's. Between Vice President Joseph Biden and his challenger, Congressman Paul Ryan. There is a treasure in our community at the LSU campus. The Cox Costume and Textile Museum is one that I think many people are probably unaware of, among many great entities on the campus of the Old War School. And with us to talk about what's going on there, designer, man who has been recognized near and far for his work in studio with us is Anthony Ryan, and he's also joined by Jeannie Trish. Good morning to both of you. Anthony?
Good morning.
Well, Anthony, I understand you have been chosen to be on Project Runway All-Stars 2. What does this mean?
I mean, it's a big challenge for me, just in the sense of I've done it once already, so... You know, going into it for that second time, it's how do I kind of revamp myself or show myself again, you know. I knew I wanted to go into it having fun, and I'm really honored just to come from the state again and come from LSU and be able to have this opportunity to, you know, bring more awareness to the state and what we do here creatively.
You're from Louisiana?
Not originally, but this is my home. I've been here for about 15 years.
So you like this area?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I went to LSU. I graduated in apparel design with a minor in business. It's a great program, and I learned a lot. And I just knew that I had to work hard to be able to do and continue to do what I want to do. So, you know, it was a great, you know, opportunity being on it the first time. And the fact that they called me for All-Stars, I was blown away. You know, they had five other people to choose from before me because I was seventh on my season. So... I obviously did something good the first time, you know.
Well, as I mentioned, and we'll get Jeannie to comment in just a moment, the LSU Costume and Textile Museum is a hidden treasure of sorts, and for those who are unfamiliar, it's pretty close to the Union, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's right there at the mini barn. You know, and it's really cool what they do with the Costume Museum. It raises money for them. Miss Vincey works really hard on it. You know, I know her personally as a teacher. You know, I've got a great pair of Gucci boots that I've done found at the sale. They've got some really good things that you can find, and it's all for a great cause.
All right, and that brings us to the event that is forthcoming, Your Friend's Closet Sale. What does this mean, Jean?
Well, this is an event that this is our seventh year for this, and it's an event that we have put together to raise money to buy extra things for the museum, like lighting and storage, lots of special papers and tissues that the clothing and other artifacts have to be stored in. We collect donations from the community, we say from some of the finest closets in town, and we store them and go through them and tweak them and alter a little bit and get them in good shape and put them in a collection for sale at bargain prices.
All right,
October.
And when is the sale?
The sale is this Sunday, the 14th. We have an early bird opening this year at 8 o'clock, and Anthony Ryan's going to be there at that time. The 8 o'clock opening is from 8 to 10, early bird, and the admission will be $10 at that time.
All right. That's this Sunday, the 14th.
The 14th.
And it's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and you say actually you start...
Well, the early bird...
At 8 o'clock.
Yes, the early bird starts at 8. The sale actually ends at 4 o'clock.
At the LSU Mini Farm, so... it's a prominent place on campus. And Anthony Ryan, you're a young man who has benefited immensely from your experience with LSU, and I'm sure you're intricately involved in this particular endeavor.
Oh yeah, any way that I can give back, you know, for what they've done, and just how much I enjoyed the costume museum. You know, I'll be there from 8 to 10. I've picked out some of the best looks, some of the best pieces. You can come in and ask me any questions that you have about Project Runway or just what I see for fall. You know, I did just get back from New York Fashion Week, so I do know what's trending right now.
What's hot right now?
For me, trench coats. You know, anything that you can find as a trench coat. You know, colored, printed, whatever the case may be, something to the knee.
So trench coats are in.
Oh, yeah.
What's out?
I've never been a fan of satin, so stick away from that.
So if you got a satin trench coat,
that's a no-no.
But why do fashions come and go?
I mean, fashion's constantly evolving. It's recycled at this point. You know, that's the great thing about this vintage sale. You can find something that's from the 60s, mm-hmm. from the 70s, and it's considered modern as of now. It just recycles over and over. So it's a great way to get those cool pieces that are current.
And you've got the Casual Friday thing going right now. What is that? How would I describe your shirt?
My shirt is just slouchy. I do not like mornings, so I just threw on whatever I want to in the mornings.
But you're a designer. People are watching what you wear.
Oh, yeah. They can watch what I wear, but that doesn't necessarily... You know, I know my hair is blue.
And your shirt is red.
My shirt is red, and I have on printed shorts this morning.
Patriotic guy.
Oh, yeah.
And boots.
Well, LSU will be a hopping place. Tomorrow it's South Carolina, number 3 in the nation, invading Tiger Stadium. And Sunday it is the Your Friend's Closet Sale. Thank you, Gene, and thank you, Anthony.
Thank
and we'll
so
be
much.
Back Monday. Stay
thank
tuned.
You.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.